Business success usually comes to those who are too busy to be looking for it. Join RVK for the award-winning RV on Business show every Tuesday at 12 midday. It's not about thinking out of the box. There is no box. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome to 101.9 High FM 2025. This is our first show of the year. Just want to take this opportunity to wish everybody everything of the best for 2025. Wishing everybody health and prosperity and everything of the best when it comes to your financial life and your personal life and your material and your spiritual. Please, God, just be a good year for everyone. I am actually in South Africa at the moment. I'm sitting in my happy place in Hartbeespoort, a place that I've, you know, pulled on my heartstrings since I was a young kid, and very, very warming to be back here, just to be in the ambiance of South Africans, warm, friendly, great sense of humor, happy and easy to interact with. I'm really, really excited to be in South Africa and especially here in Hartbeespoort. And I'm also incredibly grateful to everybody for their feedback from the last show of last year. I really thought it would just be a nice way to end off, to tie everything together, to answer all the questions that hadn't been answered yet. I wasn't able to answer all of them, but the feedback was phenomenal. People really were grateful that I touched on certain things. So what I thought that I'll do today is to finish off some of those questions. There's just a few left that hadn't been answered, and also deal with a few scenarios that came up in my practice over December, just to highlight those so we can really start the year on a footing where we understand exactly where we are and where we go forward. Let's dive straight into it, and let's start with short-term insurance. And by that, I mean insurance that everybody has to cover their house, their possessions in the house, their portable items, their car, etc., etc. So once again, I'm hearing a lot of noise about insurance companies not paying, especially when it comes to damage from rain. This is an ongoing issue, but I think what we're finding now is that insurance companies are getting a lot more selective. They are investigating a lot more in detail, and now spending time on each claim individually to see how it all pans out. My feeling very strongly, and I say this from both an ethical point of view and a practical point of view, I do believe that every insurance company in South Africa is designed to pay. They are looking for an excuse to pay a claim. But there are certain times when a claim cannot be paid because it doesn't reach the criteria. We as clients have had a loss, we've suffered damage, we are not in the position we were prior to the event happening, and then insurance companies telling us they're not going to pay the claim. So let me deal with practical events that have happened in my practice over the last 6 weeks. The one that came up in the last couple of days was a client who put in a claim for damage because of a storm, and it was the run-of-the-mill storm happened. Water came gushing in down the roof. It went down the roof. It damaged whatever was on the wall. It damaged the carpets, et cetera, et cetera. And please, can we have a claim? We opened the claim. The assessor went out. And then the assessor calls me. And when the assessor calls me, I know that we're in for a bit of a negotiation. What happened here is that when the storm happened, the water came down the roof. It hit the gutters. The gutters were drilled into a wooden supporting beam that was totally rotten. And that's just wear and tear. That beam rots as time goes by. And that's maintenance. That's something that the homeowner has to check. Now, I can hear people screaming, how the hell am I meant to climb up a ladder every year and check a board that I didn't even know existed in order to prevent it rotting or replace it? I didn't even know that the board was there. And now you're holding me responsible for lack of maintenance. The bottom line is that we are all responsible to maintain our property. If you just quickly relate that to a car, if you turn around to a car manufacturer and say the engine's under warranty, the fact that it's seized because I never checked the oil is not my fault. I go to the garage and they should check it automatically, or I don't know how to check oil. That's not an excuse, especially in South Africa, where every time you pull in, the person asks you, please, may I check your oil and water? And the answer should be at every fill up, yes, because by the time the pump runs, they can quickly check your oil and water. The same thing with those things. So if you've got a house, especially if you know it's next to trees where leaves get caught, or you've got a like a slate roof where algae starts to grow on it, you need to get that stuff checked and you need to get it sorted out. Often your house plumber will do that for you. But yes, it's something that you need to put on your list. Just before the rainy season starts, call someone else to check your gutters. Or if you've got a single story house and the guy who does your garden can do it for you, do it. Maybe take a photo and say, I've checked it. So these are very upsetting scenarios. So in this particular scenario, because it was the first time claim and they realized that the client maybe didn't know that there was a problem, they entertained the claim and they played it, but with a warning that this stuff needs to be managed. The other similar claim that we had was where there was total maintenance. Everything was looked after, everything was maintained, and things was great. But what happened was that because of the volume of water, there weren't enough downpipes. And what the assessor did is he suggested to the homeowner that they're calling the gutter company and they put another two or three downpipes in certain areas. And I thought that was really great. Not only did they entertain the claim, but they realized that the client had done everything right and they made suggestions in order to do things a little bit more of a certain service orientated way. So once again, we're just going to be aware of those things. Especially if you live in a home where there's a lot of trees around, the leaves fall into the gutter, you've got to get that cleaned out. Because if you don't do that, you're going to have a problem with the claim. The other thing that I want to point out is when you do renovations on your house, a lot of people do renovations on their property and they speak to a friend and there's some bucky guy that they used and he's absolutely fantastic. And all of a sudden, they're doing a renovation by him. It's all good and well when you're painting inside or you, I don't know, fixing a kitchen cupboard or putting a set of shelves up. But when you start changing the layout of the property, whether it's inside or outside, I strongly recommend that you get hold of the original plans and that your builder, who's a registered builder, complies with the scenario that are stated in the claim. We had a claim down in Cape Town during the rainy season there, where a client came into the house and he decided that he wanted to change things. He changed the outside patio, and the builder suggested to him that he makes it slope away from the house to prevent any water going into the house. Everything was complied with from that point of view. But what they did not comply with was the fact that the drains were not the right size and the drains were not in the right position as detailed by the plan. And the distance from the patio into the house, that step wasn't deep enough. Those might seem trivial, they might seem unimportant, they really might seem like, why worry about them? Until your house gets flooded and every floor lifts, every carpet is damaged, stuff that was lying on the floor, your table legs, your chair legs, all get water damage, and the claim is not entertained simply because you did not take the time to follow those instructions. And it's not the insurance companies being ridiculous. It's a case of it is a responsibility for us as homeowners that we need to comply to certain things. Once again, I often refer to a scenario where there was a massive case that happened with Boeing many, many years ago, where a client of them called them to say that there's a crack at the back of a plane. And Boeing sent them a kit and a design of exactly where to put the bolts. And the chief engineer at this airline decided that he didn't need to use all the bolts. He would use one bolt less for whatever reason. And this plane had an accident where that piece actually broke off. And when it went to court, the chief engineer at the airline committed suicide because he realized that he hadn't followed the instructions and the case was open and shut, so to speak. So once again, please just be cognizant of that, and please be aware that one needs to follow the rules as to how things work. I don't know if you're going to take a break now. If you do, Craig will tell me. Craig, are we good for a break yet? Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
And talking about health, let's answer one or two questions that have come up about medical aid. First of all, I haven't had one or two questions. I've had, I don't know how many questions. It's been more of a statement. It's been more of a outcry for help, of shock and horror about the increase in medical aid costs. I know the insurance companies talk about percentages. Bottom line is, we talk about rands and cents. When you have a 10% increase or a 15% increase on 10,000 rand, that's 1,000 rand, 1,500 rand. It is a lot of money. Medical aid has become very, very expensive. We all know the upside. We all know what it covers. We've all got stories where medical aid saved this one's life and covered this one's operation without any co-payments. And we have people who've had one or two challenges, but on the whole, we understand the importance of it. But the cost of it has really got expensive. I'm not here to justify it, and I'm not here to discuss it. It is what it is. What I really want to say is that a lot of people have looked at the medical aid. Hopefully, those who wanted to upgrade, so to speak, have already done that, because if not, it's a little bit late. And a lot of people have downgraded, and now they're starting to feel that every time they go somewhere, they need to pay out of their pocket. It's all good and well when your debit order for your medical aid is lower, but now you have to have that cash flow to fund the ongoing expenses of your medical aid. One or two crises have cropped up that I just want to mention, and that's people moving from one medical aid to another. If you are a private person, in other words, you're not moving through your company, you've got to be very, very careful moving from one medical aid to another. If you're doing it because you didn't have a choice, in other words, your employer is paying for it, that's a different scenario. But if you decide to move from medical aid A to medical aid B because you feel that B is giving you better benefits, you can definitely get what we call a 3 month general waiting period. In other words, for 3 months, the medical aid will not pay your expenses, and you can get a 12-month case-specific exclusion, which means that if you have anything existing, they won't pay for that for 12 months. So you must just be very aware of that. Where I've seen people fall foul of law is where they say, well, that's not a problem. I'll bite the bullet for 3 months. I'll stay on my medical aid A for January, February, and March. And then I'll go off at the end of March. By that time, my 3 month waiting period will have expired at medical aid B, and I'm good to go. The answer is, you're not good to go, except for, I suppose, in extreme cases, to prison. But that shouldn't come to that. That is illegal. One cannot be on two medical aids at one time. So you really need to go into it informed. The fact that you might squeal and complain that it's unfair, it's this, it's that, insurance companies are this and that, you've got to put that in your back pocket. You've got to deal with the facts that are in front of you, and you've got to take the risks involved in making that decision. And as long as you're informed and you know what you're in for, then it's easier to weather that storm. And the storm does pass, but one must just be aware of it. If you're moving because you have moved jobs, that's a lot simpler. If you're moving because you're joining a spouse's medical aid, also a lot simpler. In those cases, that usually should be a painless movement between the one and the other. The other thing that I want to bring up, because it's come up once or twice over the last couple of weeks, is non-disclosure. Now, non-disclosure is a bit of a moot point because we're not quite sure what it actually means in colloquial English. If you and I are having a discussion, what do I need to disclose and what don't I need to disclose? What do I consider material, and what does the medical aid consider material? The question's often asked, do I need to mention that I had a tooth extracted as a child when I was 6 years old? Do I need to mention that I broke my arm playing rugby in high school and that I was in a class for 6 weeks and I'm perfectly fine? The answer to all those questions is disclose everything that you remember. You might feel it's over the top. You might say, well, I'm incriminating myself. Opposite or the corollary to incriminating yourself is being slapped with a status of non-disclosure, which is a stigma that will stay with you forever. Every time you apply to a medical aid, that will be there that you were once charged with or accused of non-disclosure. So just put everything down. The common ones that we see are things like high blood pressure. Person says, I've been on the medication for years. I don't have high blood pressure because I'm on the medication. The medical aid pays for my medication. Why should I disclose it? Like, duh, don't they know? And the answer is stop overthinking the scenario. You were asked to disclose. You were asked a specific question, answer it. Don't make assumptions and don't make exclusions. Answer the question as it's presented to you. So if you just be careful with that, and it might take a little bit longer, it might be a little bit frustrating, but at least you then put everything down on paper and you've got your answer and you can go from there. When it comes to medical aid, one of the big questions we asked is about gap cover. Gap cover is a phenomenal product. You can get many different products on the market. We've had clients who don't want to leave the existing gap cover because they've had a great service from it. Just look around, see what's available. But if you get a gap cover that is linked to your medical aid, the promise that the medical aid gives you is that it's a seamless process, is that you don't have to apply to two different policies. If you are in hospital and the bill goes above what the normal medical aid would be, they will then pass it on to Gap and Gap will cover it. So it should make your life seamless from that point of view. So just look into that. But once again, please be aware of how much, what your percentage cover is on your medical aid and how much additional you get on your gap cover. So if you're 100% of medical health rates on your medical aid and your gap cover gives you another 200%, you are at 300%. If you're on 200% on medical aid rates and you got another 200, that's 400. Some gap covers will be 300%, so you're at 500. And some procedures you can ask up front. For example, if you're having a baby and you know that you've got an elective caesar, you can ask the gynae what they charge, what the anaesthetist what they charge, what the pediatrician you can't always necessarily charge, but you can get an idea of what a pediatrician in this hospital will charge. And then you should see whether you're covered between your medical aid and your gap cover. And if you don't have gap cover, then you can anticipate that there might be a little bit extra from the anaesthetist and the pediatrician. So long as you're aware of that. But these things are quite important just to be aware of. And one thing that I've said for years, and I will continue to say, is that if you are ill-informed or not informed, that is your fault. Your broker earns commission, whether it's tacit or it's active, whether you're aware of it or not aware of it. They are paid for every policy that they have on the books. You are entitled to ask for time and to sit down and to get the answers that you need. Yes, your broker, just like anybody else, is busy. They'll have to schedule time. But it should be within a reasonable time frame. If there are extenuating circumstances and the person you need urgent time, then it should be done after hours without a problem. But to walk around and say, I could never get help is not an excuse. Ultimately, you need to inform yourself. And if you're not getting service in one place, you need to take the bull by the horn, so to speak, and go get it somewhere else. But again, it's also within reason. It does come to a point where something was explained once, twice, documentation is sent through, and then you need to do a little bit of research on your own. We had a scenario now where every time a client asked for advice, he was told by the broker, you must come to my seminars or go online. That's not an answer. I'm sorry. Unless your seminar runs twice a week on that topic, that's not an answer. You should be able to afford your client half an hour to sit down and go through things properly. Just another thing as an aside, if I can make a request to clients who are meeting on Zoom, on Teams, or whatever platform you're using, as someone who uses those platforms all the time and meets multiple people daily on those platforms, it is so disheartening to speak to a name on the screen. If you are on a meeting, please be in bear in mind that there needs to be eye contact. That's the beauty about the technology. You want to be able to smile at the person, have this person smile back. You want to be able to look at your clients and think, oh, client doesn't really grasp the concept. Let me repeat myself. But if your camera's not on, it's just very, very, very difficult. And please be in mind that these meetings should be treated as a face-to-face. You can move your screen so that only your face is showing. You don't have to, you can go in a t-shirt and your underwear, but keep your camera on. It just makes interaction so much more lively and so much more beneficial. I've just got a message through now from a client who says, I wish to remain anonymous because I am seething. He says, particularly about a particular medical aid. I won't mention any names, but it's the medical aid company where I work, that they keep pushing up the premiums. The benefits are getting less. This is an absolute ripoff, and I'm sick and tired of it. Well, you're not alone, but you do have choices. And this show is not a place for me to make excuses or to explain the actions of the medical aid companies. This show is for me to inform you as to what's available and to really say to you that you need to look at the different plans. And you might need to change your plan and change your mindset, that this is what it is. And every year, you need to look at what's on offer and what best suits you and what best suits your family and make a decision from there. It is challenging, it is frustrating, but that's what we need to do. Okay, we are starting as usual to run out of time. So I just want to get to one or two questions that came through on the life insurance side. A very interesting scenario came through in December where a client emailed us and used light-hearted wording like, my daughter is finally off the payroll. She is qualified, she's starting her articles, and she's receiving a salary that is big enough to pay her own expenses, and part of her salary is that the medical aid is covered. Please re remove her from my medical aid. And please reduce my life cover accordingly. So I wish it was as simple as going onto the client's life insurance and removing the daughter, and then the life cover will adjust automatically. Because you might have planned 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and then reviewed it every year that this child would need X amount of money should something happen. But it's not an exact science. And sometimes it's really difficult just to remove an amount. One would need to sit down and relook at the whole scenario. Let's say there was an only child. And by removing this child, the parents are no longer responsible for the financial well-being of their children. But now we need to look at what is their medical aid costs? How close are you to retirement? How much money have you saved for retirement? If you had to pass away now, would your wife still need to contribute towards a retirement fund in order for her to have enough money? And we need to use the life cover to gap that. So it's not a simple procedure where we can just give an instruction and we'll follow it. It's more about an opportunity to sit down and re-look at things in order to create the portfolio that is really running with the times. Yes, we do try to plan for year on year going forward, with inflationary increases and things like that. But we all know medical aid, schooling, interest rates change the scenario on an ongoing basis. And once again, ignorance is no excuse. If you haven't updated stuff and you're not on top of stuff, you cannot turn around afterwards and say why. We need to demand that on an annual basis, things are looked at and things are readjusted. Off the cuff, the majority of people have the problem that the life insurance premium has become unaffordable. That's become too expensive together with everything else, and they are looking to cut. And unfortunately, it's one of the first benefits that goes because it's an invisible benefit. It's the grudge purchase, as the term that people like to use. So one just needs to be aware of the importance and how it works and what you need. And before you shut down, before you, sorry, downgrade or cancel your medical aid, please speak to your broker, sit down with them, and make sure that things are adjusted and that you have the right amount of cover that makes sure that everything is in place.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 Chai FM. It is 21 minutes to one. Thank you so much for joining us. My screen has gone blank. I'm not sure what happened, but I know we're running out of time. So just to maybe let you know once again that Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage your health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears and family plan. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside the Dis-Chem pharmacies. Better health starts here. Thank you once again for listening, and thank you for being with us. We are just finishing off now with a few of the questions that came through from last year and a few of the scenarios that we are dealing with. The last one that I want to deal with is something that I will definitely carry on to next week, because it has got to do with maturity dates on investments. There seems to be a lot of confusion around maturity dates of different investments. When you start an investment, it gives you a different maturity date, whether it's retirement annuity, endowment, or a flexible investment. The maturity date means different things. Sometimes it's just a target date, a date that you are planning to achieve. Sometimes the date actually regulates the costs on the investments. So that's something we're going to look at next week. Next week, I look forward to having Charlene Kinnear in the studio. She's a senior financial planner at Discovery, a technical expert, and I hope she'll be able to have a discussion as to how these things all work so that you understand the importance of the maturity date. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. Thank you so much for listening to us. Thank you so much for joining. Craig, as always, Happy New Year to you and all the best. Thanks for pushing the buttons. We'll speak to you next week.